Thank you, Lynn, and hello, everyone. It's wonderful to be back. I'm going to share a song with you. As you guys know, I occasionally hear songs that inspire me, and when I do, I add them to my playlist. And I tend to listen to them, you know, while I'm showering and getting ready, when I'm walking Jamie, sometimes when I'm working. But not always when I'm working. When I'm working more, I'll listen to songs without any words at all, so that I'm not distracted from my work. But between the shower and the walk, you know, I get to listen to these songs over an hour a day, and I find the songs that I listen to be very, very, very helpful. You know, just, I think what they do is they speak to my heart and therefore light a fire on my willingness. And this week, while in contemplation, a new song came to me. That's kind of funny that this particular song should show up as a song, as a song that inspires me. But, you know, sometimes when you're in contemplation and a song floats into your head, you hear that song differently than you've ever heard it before. This song was Jasmine's favorite song when she was 4 years old. But it's not a children's song. Or at least, you know, not like Row, Row, Row Your Boat. This was a Britney Spears song, and probably most of y'all have heard it because it was quite popular for a time. Oops, I Did It Again. And what I want to share with you before I play the song, I'd like to share with you the lyrics and how I heard those lyrics while I was in contemplation. First of all, when I was in contemplation and this song came to me, I heard the singer of the song being thought or mind, and the one that it was singing to was attention. And as we all know, attention gets lost in thought. So here's what thought was saying to attention. Oops, I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Because, of course, when attention gets lost in the mind, it actually thinks that the mind is me, that the thoughts are me. These are my thoughts. This is what I think, right? So more than just friends, you know, me is much more than just friends. So, oops, I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Oh, baby. It might seem like a crush, but it doesn't mean that I'm serious. And then it says, cause to lose all my senses is just so typically me. And when I heard that line, to lose all my senses, this would mean my sensibility. And of course, we all know that the mind is very, very crazy. It constantly loses its sensibility. So to lose all my senses is just so typically me. Oh, baby, baby. Oops, I did it again. I play with your heart. And then Britney Spears says, got lost in the game. But the way that got interpreted for me, again, thought was speaking to attention. It was, you got lost in the game. Telling attention, you got lost in my game. That's what thought is saying. Oops, I did it again. I played with your heart. You got lost in the game. Oh, baby, baby. Oops, you think I'm in love, that I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent. And in fact, I'm not that innocent was a key line in the song, because the sentence that I was contemplating when the song came to me is a sentence from Michael Langford's book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. It comes from chapter 1. It's sentence number 46. And this is what Michael Langford's book says. Living from thought instead of living from awareness is the cause of all human suffering. Again, living from thought instead of living from awareness is the cause of all human suffering. So again, when thought says, I'm not that innocent, when it says that to attention, that's a very honest statement coming from thought. And then thought continued, you see, my problem is this. I'm dreaming away, which we know thought is always doing, dreaming away. Wishing that heroes, they truly exist, you know, making up fantasies. Of course, in order to have heroes, you also have to have bad guys. You have to have duality. I cry watching the days because it gets totally caught up in the world, totally looking outward, involved in everything. Can't you see I'm a fool in so many ways? Again, a very honest statement coming from thought, speaking to attention. Can't you see I'm a fool in so many ways? And then again, but to lose all my senses is just so typically me. Why don't we go ahead and listen then to a pop song from the past. But again, as we listen this time, let's do it kind of contemplatively, remembering that this is thought speaking to attention. And again, remembering that this is the sentence that was being contemplated when this song came into the memory. Living from thought instead of living from awareness is the cause of all human suffering. And here we have thought as a friend, warning attention one more time not to get lost in me.
I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Oh baby, it might seem like a crush, but it doesn't mean that I'm serious. 'Cause you lose all my senses. That is just so typically me. Oh baby, play that.
Of thought to remind attention, I'm not that innocent. And by the way, that version of the song was the Glee cast version of the song, which is, if you're listening to it for the purpose that I'm listening to it for, that's a much better version. Britney Spears has one extra verse in it that then makes it clear that we're talking about a girl playing a boy. So, and it's nice that the Glee cast actually just leaves that verse out. So it's really nice to listen to that song to remember that thought is not that innocent, that getting lost in thought is the cause of all suffering. It's a sweet song. So my song of the week, and I want to thank you all for listening to it with me. So we are here now for the 7 steps to awakening. And tonight I'm going to begin with quote 641, which is coming from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. Let me give you a link to my journal All right, the link is in the room. And I will start by reading the quote from Yoga Vasistha. And then after we look at the quote, we will go and look at my journal. And the link, of course, is to my journal. If you want to find the quote, you'll find it in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and it's quote number 641. Here we go. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. Regard the mind as a foreigner, or a piece of wood or stone. There is no mind in infinite consciousness. That which is done by this non-existent mind is also unreal. Be established in this realization. So we talk a lot about not getting caught up in thought. But thought sometimes has effects, and mood is a good word to describe some of those effects. Maybe not quite emotion, you know, like emotion is like, fear, guilt, unworthiness, jealousy, anger, right? Those are emotions. But sometimes we can just have moods. You know, maybe we have a mood, a mood to be lazy. Maybe we have a mood to, it's hard for me to think of things anymore because the truth is I've become so much more consistent. I am certain that once upon a time I could have listed for you the many, many moods that I had. I remember once upon a time, here's a mood. I had a weekend mood. It would come upon me on the weekends, where I would just want to watch movies and eat junk food. This is even before I had Jasmine. I probably used to watch 4 or 5 movies a weekend easily. I got lost in them. I used to tell people that movies were my drug of choice. And the junk food as well. And in fact, I remember I would go to Wendy's often, get a single cheese, French fries, and a Diet Pepsi. And I like to go and get some other kind of dessert. Lots of times the king size Reese's Nutrageous bars. And I would watch movies and eat. And this was a mood. It was a mood, not really an emotion. And there were thoughts that were certainly a part of it, but the mood is what drew me in. And so what's interesting about this particular quote is it's asking us not to get tangled with the moods of your mind. I think that sometimes what we can probably do with a mood is I think that those of us who talk about following guidance, I think we can even confuse a mood with guidance. Because a mood can kind of pull us in a certain direction. Another type of mood that I used to get, it's funny how these are coming back to me. Another type of mood that I used to get in the summer was to, of course, put on my bathing suit and spend the entire day at the beach if I happen to live near a beach, or in my backyard laying in the sun, or if there were times when I lived in apartment complexes and I would hang out at the pool. This was a very definite mood. And so because moods can have this pull forward feeling, I think that we can confuse moods with guidance. And we're being told, do not get tangled with the moods of mind. Well, how do we tell the difference between a mood and guidance? The answer that's coming to me is to ask, what is this for? You know, the mood that I used to get on weekends of eating junk food and watching lots and lots of movies, that was actually for escape. That's how I escaped the world. Maybe somebody gets the mood to get high, or the mood to drink, get drunk, or get at least get a nice buzz on. These are moods. And again, if I really look honestly at my mood to eat and watch movies all weekend, it was an escape. And if I see that I'm trying to escape from the world, that I'm trying to get lost in a fantasy of a movie and in the taste buds of the junk food, well, then I know that's not guidance. It doesn't have any purpose of helpfulness toward awakening. And what about the mood of laying in the sun? Well, back when I used to put on a bathing suit and hang out at the beach or the pool or in the backyard laying in the sun all day, I actually felt beautiful. I wanted to feel beautiful instead of ugly, unworthy. And when I got that deep, dark tan and my hair, you know, I'm a blonde, so if I lay in the sun all day, my hair bleaches out to get really nice and blonde, and my skin gets, you know, that nice dark tan. I felt beautiful in the summer when that would happen. But isn't that really just another form of escape? Right? Instead of looking at unworthiness and looking at false beliefs, I have this, in the summertime, I have this temporary magic that comes from the sun that I can use to feel beautiful. Again, moods have a definite pull forward feel to them. And so it's easy to get a mood confused with guidance. I'm in the mood to ... does not mean that it's guidance. So asking what is this for and really looking at it will help us not to get tangled in the moods of the mind. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. And of course we know that truth is consistent. Truth doesn't have moods. So another thing that we could possibly do if we notice that something is a mood, you know, we had this pull forward feel, but we paused enough to ask, what is this for? And we see now that this is really not guidance. This is a mood. We see that. But then maybe one thing we could do with it is practice Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry. You know, we could really look and see, first of all, what is it that wants to spend the day eating food and watching movies, or spend the day out in the sun just laying there becoming beautiful, or spend the evening getting high? What is it that wants to do that? And we might see very, very quickly that it's the mind. It's the mind. And then we could ask, what am I? And when we ask, what am I? Again, it turns the attention around. Instead of looking out towards thought, mood, and world, it turns the attention around and it focuses the attention on that which is consistent, that which is always here, that which never changes. And then we can watch that and abide as that. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. Regard the mind as a foreigner. And then although it sounds funny, the next thing that he says, I think it's actually very helpful. Very helpful. He says, regard the mind as a foreigner. Of course, if it's a foreigner, it's not you, right? So if the mind has a mood, it's not my mood, because the mind is not me. Right? The mind is having a mood. I'm not having a mood. So it's a foreigner. But then he goes on to say, regard the mind as a foreigner or a piece of wood or stone. Well, what is a piece of wood or a piece of stone? It's just an object. And an object is something I can look at. So if I regard the mind as a piece of wood or a stone, then I can look at the mind. I can look at the mind. If I can look at the mind, like I can look at a piece of wood or look at a stone, then I'm not confused into thinking I am the mind. I'm what's looking at the mind. Right? Regard the mind as a foreigner or a piece of wood or stone. There is no mind in infinite consciousness. That which is done by this non-existent mind is also unreal. Be established in this realization. So the mind may have a mood to spend the weekend watching movies and eating junk food or laying in the sun or getting high. But if I realize who I am, I realize the mind is not what I am, its moods are not my moods, and that mind is the realm of illusion, the realm of unreal. And I remain established in that realization, then I can abide as my ever-present, changeless self. And I won't be tossed about, or as Yoga Vasistha says, I won't get entangled in those moods of mind. So let me read this Yoga Vasistha quote again, and then we'll go and look at my journal. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. Regard the mind as a foreigner or a piece of wood or stone. There is no mind in infinite consciousness. That which is done by this non-existent mind is also unreal. Be established in this realization. All right, I'm going to look at my journal starting with 641A. The mind is an object. It can be observed. Observe it, notice it, but do not get caught up in believing it. To believe it is to believe that a mere object is what you are. So 641A says observe it, notice it. This is often what's called mind watching. And the reason mind watching needs to happen is because until we become aware of the mind, we do believe the mind. If we aren't aware of it, we are believing it. When we learn to stand back away from the mind and look at it from there and see it with awareness, maybe even question it if we need to, but when we learn to stand back from the mind and see it with awareness, that's when we begin to see the mind clearly. We can see its insanity. We can see how, you know, it comes up with all kinds of problems. It offers all kinds of solutions. And if we buy into its solutions, oh my goodness, its solutions create a new set of problems. And you know, we can just see the mind for what it is. Remember in this song we were listening to, Oops, I Did It Again. Remember in the lyrics in that song, let's see if I still have the lyrics open. Oh, good, I do. In the lyrics of that song, it says, to lose all my senses, that is just so typically me. That's what the mind does. It loses all of its senses all of the time. To lose all my senses, that is just so typically me. And if we don't step back and look at it with awareness, we don't see that. We don't see that the mind is just this crazy chatter going in all directions, not ever actually being helpful. Maybe it does give a solution to a problem, but then like I said, there's new problems that come out of those solutions. And, you know, there's just no end to the mind. There's never an answer that satisfies everything and results in consistent eternal happiness. It doesn't happen with the mind. It doesn't happen with the mind. And so, you know, we need to at some point see how foolish this mind is. In fact, another line in the song was, let's see, can't you see I'm a fool in so many ways? And again, to lose all my senses is just so typically me. If we don't look at it, we don't see that. We think our mind is wise. But if we look at it from awareness, we begin to see that that is not true. And this is very, very, very important. Because as long as we think the mind is our wisdom, our good judgment, me, I'm going to keep listening to it. I'm going to. But if I step back with awareness and I observe the mind and I see the mind for what it is, then I might choose to stop listening to it. I might see that to listen to something that loses all its senses all the time, to listen to something that's a fool in so many ways, is not my best choice. And then I might also begin to notice again that I am looking at the mind, which means the mind can't be me. So observing the mind with awareness can be a very, very helpful step. And that's what 641A is all about. The mind is an object. It can be observed. Observe it, notice it, but do not get caught up in believing it. To believe it is to believe that a mere object is what you are. And I'm going to scroll down and click on number 641B. And before I read 641B, I'm going to read the Yoga Vasistha quote that we're looking at again. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. Regard the mind as a foreigner, or a piece of wood or stone. There is no mind in infinite consciousness. That which is done by this non-existent mind is also unreal. Be established in this realization. So reading from 641B, mind changes. Do not get caught up in the changing fancies of mind. Find that which does not change and abide there. There is an exercise that you could participate in if you want to, in order to see that this is true. You could each day before you go to bed just very briefly write down on a calendar the primary concern of the mind that day. And of course, if your mind is anything like my mind, and I'm sure that it is, there isn't one concern for any day. There's always going to be multiple concerns. The mind goes in all directions all the time. But sometimes there's a primary concern. Often there's, you know, one thing in particular that the mind is worried about, and it can seem very, very serious that this thing get resolved. So just every night before you go to bed, write down on the calendar, here's the big story of the day, fear of the day, worry of the day. And then, of course, the next day, do the same thing. The next day, do the same thing. Go ahead and spend a year just writing on a calendar at the end of each day, here's what the mind was occupied with today. This was really important to the mind today. And then the following year, do something different. After you've done this every day for a year, and the next year, start with a fresh calendar, you know, and say, here's what the mind's concern was today, so that part is the same. But then look at last year's calendar. Probably, if you're anything like me, a lot of those really important stories from last year are not only entirely different than today's big important story, but I didn't even remember that now. And if you do this for an entire year, so this is now your second year in this exercise, for an entire year, every night you write down first, here was the big concern today, and then look back at last year's big concern and do this every day for the second year, you might begin to get a sense that mind always has a big concern. It always has something to suck you in to get you to pay attention to it. But other than that, there's absolutely nothing consistent about mind. Those stories shift and change all the time. And what seems so dang dramatically important today, like I really need to spend all of my time thinking about this today. If I don't, the world is going to cave in. By the next year, it's completely forgotten. It really was not that important. You know, again, the Britney Spears song begins by saying, I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends, right? I made you believe that I'm you. I gave you all of these big concerns, these big worries. I pretended like I was you and that you needed to resolve these problems. And boy, you just got lost in the game. Oh, baby. You think I'm in love. You think that I care about you. You think I'm trying to keep you safe, and that's why I have all of these thoughts every day, thinking about these concerns and these worries. You think I'm in love. Not only that, you think I'm sent from above. You think that I'm the wisdom, I'm the judgment, and the good judgment, and if you give all of your attention to me, I'm going to resolve all of your problems and make you very, very happy. That's what you think. But I'm not that innocent. And in fact, if you do this exercise for 2 years, if you do the exercise even for a third year, and on the third year you write down today's big worry, big concern, big problem, look back at last year and look back at 2 years ago on the same date, you might also see that not only did mind promise you that if you think about this long enough with me, I'm going to be able to resolve this, and then you're going to be very, very happy, you might also come to see that never happens. That never happens. Even when something is resolved, when a particular story is resolved and forgotten about, all that happens is that there's a new story. There's a new concern. And in fact, if you do this for 4 years and 5 years and 6 years and 7 years, you're going to see that as long as you continue to listen to a mind, there's never going to be any change in this process. It's going to keep right on having very important concerns that aren't that important. You can tell by looking at your past calendars because they were forgotten. But really all it is doing is sucking you in, getting you to continually believe that thought is me, that its worries are my worries. So again, 641B says mind changes. This is an important thing to notice, that mind changes, but that its primary goal remains the same, to suck you in. Mind changes. Do not get caught up in the changing fancies of mind. Instead of doing that, instead of spending 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years, continually listening to this mind that is forever changing. Well, now that you've done the exercise for 2 or 3 years, there's no reason to do that anymore. You've seen what you need to see. Now, instead, make a change. Make a change. Every time you see mind starting up with its story of the day, say to it, I know, I see you, that's just the story of the day. And then shift your attention away from thought, away from mood, away from the story, back to that which is changeless, that awareness that was present 2 years ago when you started this exercise, that awareness that was present last year when you were doing that exercise, that awareness that's still here now. And even though mind has changed multiple times during the time that you've been doing this exercise, the awareness has remained very consistent, and not only that, much more intimately you. Because you can look at the mind like a piece of wood or a stone. It's an object. But you can't look at you in that same way. You can be aware of you, but you can't look at you. It's not an object. You know, just as without a mirror, eyes cannot see themselves, right? Eyes cannot see themselves when they look out. You cannot see yourself when you look out, yet you can be aware of yourself. Mind changes. Do not get caught up in the changing fancies of mind. Find that which does not change and abide there. All right, I'm going to scroll down to the bottom of the screen and I'm going to click on number 641C in the journal. And before I read that, I will read Yoga Vasistha's quote one more time. This is number 641 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Do not get tangled with the moods of your mind, but be established in truth. Regard the mind as a foreigner or a piece of wood or stone. There is no mind in infinite consciousness. That which is done by this non-existent mind is also unreal. Be established in this realization. So 641C in the journal says, mind's fancies, its fleeting thoughts, are nothing but crystallized imagination. To follow mind's thought is to follow imagination. One does not find anything real by following imagination. Most people do not realize that their mind is nothing but imagination. I'll tell you one thing that most people do that is pure imagination, but they don't know it's imagination. This is a perfect example. They look at someone else. They imagine what they are thinking. And they believe they are right. So, for example, I was at a retreat a few years ago. This was a few years ago, but it's popping into my mind as an example. I don't even remember who the person was. It was a she. If she hears this, she'll probably remember, but I don't remember who it was. But we were in the cafeteria, and we went along a table and got our food, and then we would sit down and eat, you know, like you do in a cafeteria. And then when you were done eating, you would take your tray up to the window and, you know, put your dishes there so that the dishwasher could pick it up and wash them. And right next to the place where you put your tray, there was another table, and this table had the desserts on it. So you could grab your food, sit down, eat your food, go take your tray, and then if you wanted to, grab a dessert and go back and sit down and eat it. So I had eaten my food, and I was taking my tray up, and there was a woman there grabbing a dessert, which I didn't think anything about. And then she looks at me and she says, "I know, you think I'm a pig because this is my third dessert." And I said, "No." "No," I said, "I didn't even know it was your third dessert." I didn't even know. I wasn't watching people and counting how many desserts they were having. But you see, we all do that all the time. That's just a good example. We all do that all the time. You see, that was pure imagination. She made it up in her head that I was thinking this judgmental thought while I was putting my tray away, you know, that she was a pig for having three desserts. And she believed it. That's just one example of how the mind is nothing but imagination, and we don't know it. If she hadn't said that to me out loud, if she had kept that inside of herself and just went back to her table without telling me, of course I would not have had the chance to say, "No, I wasn't thinking that," right? And she could have spent the rest of her life thinking that I thought she was a pig. And the thought never entered my mind. Yeah, Lynn, she was believing that about herself, and she projected it onto me, no doubt about it. You see, we make things up. The mind is imagination. That's all that is one little example of. I'll tell you another example. There was a time also a few years ago when I was really beginning to see just how much I make up thoughts and believe my own thought. I was beginning to see this. It was coming into awareness, and I was noticing it just everywhere. And so this was before Jasmine was old enough to drive, and so I was driving her to school one morning, and there was a truck parked on the side of the road where there usually isn't a truck parked on the side of the road. It was unusual. You know, you take the same route every morning, you get used to what's usual. And so there's this truck parked on the side of the road, and I said to Jasmine, "Oh, look, he thinks it's too cold for his child to stand outside waiting for the bus, and so he's letting his child sit in the truck." I don't remember if I even saw a child. I just remembered as I drove on by, I thought, I just made that up. And I almost believed it. I have no idea why that truck's on the side of the road. I looked at it, I made it up, and I almost believed it. And do you know we do that all the time? We see things that we know absolutely nothing about. We make up stories in our mind about what we're seeing. And then we believe our own stories. And if you don't believe me, that's another exercise you can try. Start paying attention to how much you make stuff up and believe it. So you see, the mind is imagination. We're literally going around believing the mental imagination to be some kind of wisdom. You know, if I hadn't caught it that day when I made up the story about the truck, I would have driven right on off, self-satisfied that I knew what was happening in that little part of the world. And I think that's really what we're doing. We're trying to think that we know what's happening in the world because then we feel a little more in control. I think that, you know, to the ego, so as long as we're identified with the ego, to the ego it is scary not knowing. Ego is very afraid of not knowing. Now, the true self has no fear of not knowing, right? But the ego is afraid of not knowing. And so the ego makes up stories all of the time so that it can feel like it knows. That gives it a sense of control. And when we're lost in the mind, we're foolish enough to believe everything the mind makes up and not even see that it was made up. Not even see that it was made up. And you guys, if you've never looked at this before, maybe some of you have, and if so, you're just shaking your head yes, because you know I'm speaking the truth here. But if you've never looked at this before, I will tell you, you have no idea how many times a day you make stuff up and believe it. You have no idea until you begin to look at it. So again, the journal entry for 641C says, "Mind's fancies, its fleeting thoughts, are nothing but crystallized imagination." Crystallized because a thought is actually form. It seems formless to us compared to a table. But a thought is actually form. It's an object that you can look at. So it's crystallized imagination. Mind's fancies, its fleeting thoughts, are nothing but crystallized imagination. To follow mind's thought is to follow imagination. And in this sentence, the word follow means believe. To follow mind's thought is to follow imagination. One does not find anything real by following imagination. And this is where we have to inquire, what do I really want? I mean, I think if we're here in this room now, or if we're listening on the radio, or if we're taking the time to listen to this audio later, it's because somewhere within us we've realized that what we want is truth. What we want is reality. So if we want truth, if we want reality, if that's what we want, do we also want to continue to believe our own imagination? One does not find anything real by following imagination. Mind's fancies, its fleeting thoughts, are nothing but crystallized imagination. To follow mind's thought is to follow imagination. One does not find anything real by following imagination. And I'll leave you with that as I scroll down and click on number 642. Number 642 in the Seven Steps to Awakening is another Yoga Vasistha quote, and it says that the mind is impure is the experience of everyone who strives for liberation. That the mind is impure is the experience of everyone who strives for liberation. And what that says to me is that if I really do want truth, and I'm spending my time moving in the direction of truth in whatever way is appropriate for me based on the stage that I'm at, where I'm at now, but in some way I'm beginning to look at the mind, I'm beginning to notice the mind, what I'm going to discover is that the mind is impure. Impure means mixed. You know, like if you have a glass of water and there's nothing in it but water, it is pure water. But then if you take an eyedropper and you put the eyedropper in some Coca-Cola and you fill it up and then you squirt that Coca-Cola into the water, it is no longer pure. It is mixed. It is impure. And then if you do the same thing and you put some orange juice in and you do the same thing and you put some beer in and you do some same thing and you put some tomato juice in, I mean, pretty soon that water is very, very impure. It's very, very mixed.
Or clamato juice.
Danielle says, or clamato juice, which happens to be a favorite of hers. It's very, very impure now. Right? It is no longer pure water. It is very, very impure. So impure, sometimes people hear the word impure, and especially if they still have the I am bad belief alive in their mind. I don't think I've ever said this to anyone because I know how people would interpret it. But let's just pretend like I say to you, your mind is impure. You know, a lot of people would take that as, you know, I'm a sinner or I'm a pervert or something like that. But that is not what impure means. Impure means very, very mixed, moving in all directions. It doesn't have one purpose, one cause. It's not moving in one direction. And anyone who observes the mind at all with awareness is going to see this is true. The mind is impure. And in fact, one of the practices that many of us go through is the practice of purifying the mind. And that can be very, very helpful, purifying the mind. Because one with an impure mind, a very mixed mind, going in all directions with all kinds of stories and all kinds of judgments and all kinds of false beliefs, can really have a very unsettled life. And so one thing that many of us do is we go through a process of purifying the mind, which means noticing what the mind is saying, noticing what we are believing, and starting to learn to let go of this. Let go of being attached to the mind's thoughts. And as we learn to let go of being attached to the mind's thoughts, it's called purifying the mind. And in fact, my mind today, compared to 10 years ago today, is extremely purified, which is why at the beginning of this teaching today, I had a little bit of trouble remembering moods. A couple of them came, and I know I used to have many more, but I had a little trouble because that's all, you know, ancient history for me, and I have a fairly purified mind now, which means I'm happy, I'm consistent. One thing that's interesting about a purified mind, although I strongly recommend, if you have an impure mind, I strongly recommend purification. It's extremely helpful. A purified mind is not awake. In the Hindu tradition, they have three terms that I might mispronounce, but these terms refer to different state of minds. One term is tamas, T-A-M-A-S, tamas or tamasic. And the tamasic mind is, you could argue, is the most impure. And then there's like another state of mind, which most people would say is better than the tamasic mind, and that is rajasic, R-A-J-A. The tamasic person might be the kind of person who, you know, a tamasic person might drink all of the time, be unemployed, tend to hate people very easily, right? That's a tamasic person. A rajasic person tends to be more successful in the world, you know, maybe a CEO type of person, someone who has a lot of ambitions. And so most people perceive a rajasic person to be a little better off than a tamasic person. But they're both impure states of mind. The purified mind is called sattvic, S-A-T-T-V-I-C, sattvic. The sattvic mind is the purified mind. The sattvic person is going to be very even-tempered, have a lot of clarity, be able to pay attention to intuition very well, be able to dismiss mind very easily. So this person is much happier. But the sattvic mind, the purified mind, is still not awakened. Awakening is completely beyond mind, completely beyond the attachment to mind at all. So it can be very, very helpful to purify the mind. A lot of people would argue, and I would not disagree with them, that the purified mind, the sattvic mind, is in a much better place in order to focus on, for example, awareness, watching awareness, because it's not as distracted by the world. It's also generally a happier person, and most of us like being happy more than we like suffering, so it's a more pleasant state of mind. And because we are happier and because we are not distracted, we may be more readily available to grace when grace comes to awaken us. So it can be very, very worthwhile. In fact, I believe Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that it's a great use of time to work to purify your mind to the sattvic state of mind. But the sattvic state of mind is still not awake. In fact, if we have the sattvic state of mind, what we would want to do is take advantage of that state of mind in order to spend a lot of time in the spiritual practices that can, I'll say, invite grace or ready us to accept grace when grace comes to awaken. So again, this particular quote says that the mind is impure is the experience of everyone who strives for liberation. So at some point when awakening is our goal and we're starting to look at the mind in ways we have not looked at the mind before, what we notice is how impure the mind is. And then what we may do is undertake steps to purify the mind. And as Krishna says, that is a good way to spend time. It's helpful to get to the purified mind. It's something that we do when we're striving for liberation. That the mind is impure is the experience of everyone who strives for liberation. But I see another meaning when I look at this sentence too. As a person strives for liberation, and even as they purify the mind, they come to realize that attachment to mind, as long as you are attached to mind, even if you are attached to a pure mind, attachment to mind is not awakening. And in that way, it's always impure. Remember, we had a glass of water a while ago, and we started by putting Coca-Cola in it. And then I don't remember what we added next. We may have added orange juice. We added some Clamato juice for Danielle. I think we had some beer in there. It was very, very mixed. Purification is like taking out the clamato juice, taking out the tomato juice, taking out the orange juice, taking out the beer. And then you have, when you have just the Coke in it, just the water with a few drops of Coke, compared to what it was in the beginning, it's a very purified glass of water. But it's still impure. And that Coke, we could say, is the I thought, or the belief that I am a person, the belief that, the belief in separation. And so even if I'm highly purified, and now I can spend my time in spiritual practice awaiting grace, the mind is still mixed. And in fact, I think, based on my experience, the more clear we become, the more we see that the mind itself is a trap. When we're very mixed, when our mind is very, very impure, we may not see the mind as a trap at all. When we're very, very impure, we may see the mind as me and my savior, and it's trying to solve all my problems, and I should listen to it. But the more pure we become, there's only now a couple of drops of Coke in there, the more we see now that the mind is impure and that the mind needs to be let go completely. That as long as I am attached to the mind, I cannot know truth. So the mind, that the mind is impure, is the experience of everyone who strives for liberation. We only have 3 minutes left. Let's run over here and look at 642 in my journal. The mind cannot be trusted. The mind lies. It lies about what you are, what is real, and what matters. There is nothing in mind that is worth paying attention to. The mind cannot be trusted. The mind lies. It lies about what you are, what is real, and what matters. There is nothing in mind that is worth paying attention to. And again, like I said, it's kind of funny how when our mind is more impure, more mixed, right, that we think the paying attention to the mind is the best thing that we do. In fact, we don't even question it. We just pay attention to the mind all day long as it goes in all of its different directions. We don't even question it. The more impure we are, the mind is, the more we listen to it. But if we take the time to go through the purification process and start detaching from some of those beliefs, letting go, losing interest in the mind, seeing that this is untrue, start taking some of those, that orange juice and that clamato juice and that beer out of our water, and we get down to a fairly pure mind. The more pure the mind, the more we also see that the mind is never going to be pure. I cannot awaken and be attached to the mind. Mind itself has to be let go. Cannot believe it is me at all. I have to discover my true self and leave mine behind. The mind cannot be trusted. The mind lies. It lies about what you are, what is real, and what matters. There is nothing in mind worth paying attention to. And so if there is nothing in mind worth paying attention to, I need to begin to ask myself, why do I spend so much time every day listening to mind? All right, that's it for me for now. I will be back in 2 hours for today's daily contemplation. Thanks for hanging out with me, you guys. Bye.